Accession number 16729, Mr. William Ridley, Reel 2.
Mr. Ridley, Reel 2. You said that your father and mother were both strong religious people, and did you get involved with the Boy Scouts or the Church Lads Brigade?
Yes, I was in the Boy Scouts for quite a while, and one thing that always reminds me of the Boy Scouts is the fact that if it hadn't been for the Boy Scouts, I probably wouldn't be in doing this tape, for the simple reason that they taught me first aid. Now, the strange thing about the army in them days, in our days, nobody taught you first aid. And when I got wounded, and I knew that I'd severed at least one artery, and there was nobody there to do anything about it. So as immediately, the learning that what I'd been taught at in the Scouts come in handy in time, because what I'd done was that I hadn't lost consciousness at the time, and I asked someone to take the pull through out of my rifle and tie it round my arm and made a tourniquet, which they did, and I told them that if I passed out, but to release that tourniquet at least every 10 minutes, and fortunately I didn't lose consciousness, and I thought, thank God for the Boy Scouts that they had taught me.
Well, of course, we'll come back to that in far more detail. Other than first aid, what else did you learn in the Boy Scouts?
Well, I learned a great deal, actually. The Boy Scouts was for each other. We looked after each other, and we done the right thing, and we upheld the Scout law. And I think it's a pity that it's not more prevalent in today for the kids nowadays. And I learned a great deal in the Boy Scouts, even if it wasn't academical. It was how to be kind to each other, how to be nice to each other, and that sort of thing. Like so. That's,
what uniform did you wear?
Well, it was. Actually, it was navy blue, and of course, like all things in that time, it was cut down from somebody else's clothes. We had navy blue short trousers, which was made from some of my dad's old trousers, and a navy blue shirt with a green scarf and what we used to call a woggle, which is always gets a laugh from people, but it was quite an important thing. What they used to fasten your scarf around your neck, and also we had the Baden-Powell's big hat, which after a great length of years got very droopy and hangy around your face, like, you know.
Did you do drills and things?
Not really, no. We didn't do left turn, right turn, or anything like that. But what we did do, we were taught first aid and how to help people and hygiene and things like that. I mean, they didn't call it, I don't know what they called it in them days, hygiene. I mean, I remember one thing they used to say, that you weren't supposed to spit on the pavement because it spread germs and things like that. But all these things accumulated, and they were always good things, and the lads that used to teach were very patient with them and what have you.
How did you take to the discipline of scout activities?
Quite easy. After being disciplined by my mum, I had no problems. You know, I mean, if you didn't do what you were told, your mum certainly saw that you did. You know, and that was she was the sergeant major Can I go back to the first time my dad hit us? I remember I was. We had an outside toilet, and we used to call it a netty in them days. And I used to get into the toilet and read me Rover and me Adventure and sitting on the toilet. And this day my mum was knocked on the window, "Your dinner's ready." "Right, oh." 10 minutes later, "Your dinner's ready." "Right, oh." "If you don't get out of there, I'll come in and get you." "Right, old ma'am." So anyway, I came out and she started berating us for sitting in the toilet reading it, and I says, "Oh, shut up." The next I knew, I was flying across the kitchen floor. I crashed against the press in the back kitchen. I slid down the press, dazed beyond recall. My dad had heard us and he just gave me one backhander and that was it. And that was the only time my dad ever hit me.
And you say you were 14?
I wasn't quite 14 then. I was 14. But that was the first time my dad ever. But at the same time, my dad never showed any. Caring. Except, I remember one day when I was working and I had been out, it was winter, and I'd been out about 14 hours. I'd left out the house at about 7 in the morning, and it was snowing and raining then. I had to cycle about 3 or 4 miles to Gosforth. And I was pretty wet when I got there. Now, what we used to do in those days, we used to get the bacon man, we used to roll the bacon, we used to get old sugar sacks. First off, you used to wrap your legs with brown cap paper, and then you used to wrap a sugar sack round your leg, and both legs, of course, and the bacon man used to roll them like he does the roll of bacon, and he used to roll put the string round and roll them up, and so that your legs was covered with brown paper and the sugar sack, which was pretty kept you pretty dry like you're around there. But of course, after 12 to 14 hours in the rain all the time, it would get through anything. So anyway, this night I came back, and I'd been out since 7:30 in the morning. It was about 10:30 when I got in, and I was so cold and so I was absolutely frozen stiff, and I came to the back door and I couldn't get off the bike, so I had to just bump the bike against the back door, and my dad came out, and he lifted me off the bike in his arms. He carried me into the house, and down came the old bath off the wall, and he filled it full of water, hot water. He took me clothes off, and he bathed us, and then he wrapped us in a lovely warm white blanket. And that's the only time that I ever felt my dad had any emotion towards me, except when I came back from Dunkirk.
So the discipline of home and scouts and so forth were really preparing you for the discipline of
life.
You said that after being an errand boy, you went into the warehouse.
Yeah, well, you'd done a a stint in the warehouse, maybe it's about 18 months or something like that.
And where did you go from there?
Well, the warehouse at this time was in Hawkes Road in Gateshead. And it was a little bit less hours, you know. You would start at 8 o'clock and you finished at more or less 5 or something like that. And it was a lot easier sort of thing, right, you know. But we, what they used to do in there, used to put the orders up for the branches, right, you know. And used to have maybe a half a dozen shops or something, you know, that you'd done every week, like, you know. And then when they were delivered, you went with the truck to deliver them, and you checked it off with the manager to see if it was there, and then you got the bus back to the warehouse. And it was again, you were learning your trade, like, you know. And then after a period of time, I was made what was called the hopper boy. And this is where they used to put all their own peas and beans and sugar and tea and all that. They used to put them up themselves. And the hopper boy was the one that used to live up in the top flat of the warehouse, and he used to fill the hoppers full of tea and peas and butter beans and all that. And he used to see that the hoppers was kept full for the girls down below, for to wrap them and what have you. And I was on that for quite a bit. In fact, I was on there longer than most, because I must have been good, like, you know.
Were there increases in your wages as these?
Oh yeah, well, I was getting 8 bob a week. I mean, when you hadn't, lad. I mean, if you do 2 years and you still got 8 bob a week, it made no difference. You know, there was no increase in the thing. And I think we went up to about 12 or 13 bob in them days, like, you know. And it was around this time that we started to make friends, you know. And this is where, more or less, in the warehouse is where my friends come from, like, you know. There was Jimmy Kennedy and Bob Redshaw and Tommy Teasdale, and we got together, you know, and we had bikes, and where we used to go every weekend, you know, on Sunday, every weekend. Mostly Sunday, you know, and because we worked half day on Saturday, and we should go all over on the bikes. We should go right up the Cold Stream and that way, and down to the coast, Redcar down the other way, and every week we used to go out, and we used to take a short run 1 week, and then the next week we used to do a long run. Well, a short run was maybe to Hexham, which was about a 40-mile ride, you know, 20 mile there and 20 mile back. And the long one was maybe, as I say, Redcar up on the borders, you know, up in the borders anyway. And that was another preparation for the army, you know. It was it's give you got strong, and we'd getting strong with lifting in the warehouse, you know. And and of course it was starting out, by this time we're starting to take an interest in girls, like, you know. And not that it was really important. There was no hankering after them, like, you know. I mean, if they were there, the only reason that girls came into the picture was they had to have somebody to dance with. And this is when we're dancing. Of course, I was, as I mentioned in the beginning, I've always been able to dance, like, you know. And we used to go to the Hawks and and the Buick. Also, if we had any spare cash in our pocket, we used to go out to the Oxford Galleries in Newcastle. This, of course, is when we're into the shops. We have been sent out into the shops, and you're learning the grocery trade from the bottom. And the strange thing that always amazes me is that the lack of agro that was in at that time. I mean, it was very rarely that there was any bother. We used to go to numerous dances, and rarely was there any trouble, like, you know. And the trouble that was any fighting or anything like that was usually done by people who lived in bad areas, like the Old Fold and places like that. You've got a nucleus of villains, and Gateshead High Street was another one where it was a bit rough. And but we were reasonably free, but we did sometimes get involved. But it was always my two friends, Bob Redshaw and Jimmy Kennedy, that used to stir it up. Now, I don't know how it is, it was always me that had to finish it. I don't know how. But this is how it used to turn out. I remember one particular instance. Always, we were coming from the Oxford, and in them days, we used to be immaculate in our patent leather shoes, our long black coats, overcoats, our white silk scarves, and we were walking around along the across the Tyne Bridge in this particular time. Couldn't afford the tram fare, and we were walking along, and there was two lads who were in overalls on the other side of the bridge. Now, this was many years ago, so you could walk across the Tyne Bridge in them days, across the road, and these lads were making gestures across at us, because, as I say, we're all lashed up. But there was also two girls behind us. And I thought that they were just whistling and shouting at the girls, like, you know, which was done. And anyway, they came across the road. And they weren't taking the mickey out of the girls, they were taking the mickey out of us, right? So Jimmy turned round and he says, are you trying to be funny? Yes. What are you going to do about it now? I says, how, Jimmy? I says, leave them alone. Because in them days, if you damage your clothes, I mean, you kind of just go rolling around and, you know, fighting in your best clothes, like, you know. I said, come on, Jimmy. I says, let's go, like, you know. And this one of these lads turned around and he says, and what are you going to do about it, like? I says, look, we're not looking for trouble. Just knock it off, will you? He says, so he said something else, and I was always believe the first one's the important one. So I hit him. And by this time, we'd come to the end of the Tyne Bridge on the Gateshead side, and all the factories was coming out. And I can assure you, we fought, we scrapped at the bottom of that Gateshead High Street, and we had a bigger gate than what Gateshead had got at the particular time, until I saw the little cone-shaped helmet coming through the crowd, and I says to this lad, not knocking off box fighting, like, you know, I says, can you run, kidder? He says, aye. I says, well, let's bloody run. I says, because there's the bobby coming through the crowd there. So we broke off and we belted up the high street, and of course the bobby didn't chase for long, but we did get away, like, you know. And
Did you get involved in pub life at all in the early days?
No, we didn't. There was no drink. I didn't start to drink. I didn't even drink in the army. We didn't have the money. You know, I mean, it was only Tannet again the dance, like, you know. And on top of that, I mean, if you got into bundles with your best clothes on, you know, sort of thing. I mean, we didn't get into that many bundles. I mean, there was As I say, we didn't get too many bundles, but being lads, I mean, we occasionally cross swords with other people. One of the activities which maybe would astound people today on a Sunday night was the parade up and down the Durham Road, all dressed in my finery. Why we done that? We were supposed to be looking for girls, but I never got any girls that way. And we used to go up every Sunday night. We used to go up and down the Durham Road, and the four of us. And anyway, we happened to know two girls, and we met them up there, and we went into a small cafe. And one of the girls was the sister of a policeman, and we went in, and I went in first, and I was at the end of the seat, and there was two lads there, about 25, 26, and they'd had a few, and they were singing quietly to themselves, and so we had a cup of tea and a biscuit and what have you, and these two girls started making remarks about the two lads that was singing, and the one that was the sister of the policeman said, "I'll dare you to go out, and as you go out, throw some money down in front of them." So Jimmy and Bob said, "Oh, I don't do that thing." So they got up and they went out, and as they went past, they threw pennies and halfpennies and what have you in front of these lads. But unfortunately, I had to come the long way around out of the thing, and it hadn't struck them till I got to them, and they grabbed me by the throat and they lifted me off my feet, and what they were going to do to me. And I says, "Look," I said, "I've got nothing to do with it." Of course, they were big lads. I mean, they were, you know, like 26, and I think I was only about 16 or 17, and I didn't want to know, like, you know. So anyway, I got away anyway, and they took me word that it wasn't me, like, which it wasn't me. And I caught up to the gang about 30 yards away from the cafe, and they were giggling their heads off, like, you know. And of course, I was a bit irate, and I said to the two mates, I says, "Well," I says, "you're a couple of fellas." I says, "You left me there I says, "they could have killed me." And of course, it was full of laughs. And then all of a sudden, Jimmy went white. And I says, "What's the matter with you?" He says, "I've left my gloves in the cafe." I says, "Well, get yourself back and get them." So sure enough, he went back to the thing. And he walked in. And I says, "Get back." I says, "I'm not coming." Anyway, I chickened out, and I thought, I says, they'll murder him if they start with him, because he couldn't use himself, really. And I run after him, like. And as he went into the cafe, these two lads came out. Eh? They walked past Jimmy, and he gets out of me again. And he tugged us outside, and by this time I'd lost my cool, like, and so I belted him, like, you know. And we had a bit of a scuffle. It wasn't much. And there was a copper came on the scene, like, because in them days the copper was on the scene, so we scarred, like. But that was the story of Jimmy's gloves. I still rub up into them when I see him and all.
What was the discipline of the workplace like?
Wasn't bad. It wasn't strict. I mean, you had to do what you're told. That was the important thing. I mean, you'd done things wrong. You didn't get the sack immediately. And I was with that company, which is another story, which probably will come to in future. I was with them from the time I was 14 till the time I joined the army.
You went into the shop. What was your job in the shop?
Well, when you went into the shops, you were jack of all trades, begin with, like, you know. I mean, you were delivering all counterhand, and then nine times you ended up doing the baking, boning the baking, and that sort of thing. You're more or less what you call a provision hand, and you learned, and of course, in this period, you were going to night schools, learning about you know, like where the cheese come from and what kind of cheese was what and how to be how to bone bacon and how to roll and how to cut it and what have you. Learned the discipline of the baking machine and what have you, you know, not to take liberties with a baking machine, like. And in them days, they were a little bit more dangerous than what they are now, like, you know. I mean, they could take your finger off. But in fact, I've still got scars on my hand where I've been, where I was caught, like, you know. But the discipline was, it wasn't there. And then, if you got, it depend on what shop you got into, like, you know, and you were, there was always japes going on, like, you know. Like, sort of, pushing the new initiates into the flower bin and things like that sort of thing. There was always something like that going on, like, you know. And if it was in my case, which was a pretty big shop, you know, the boss never knew what was going on, like, sort of thing, like, you know.
With the war approaching, were there any signs and indications before the actual breakout that things were serious or becoming serious?
Well, to be quite honest with you, speaking for myself, I knew I'd heard of Adolf Hitler, but I don't know whether we interested in it at all. It was just something that was happening somewhere in the other part of the world. And we had no idea the seriousness of it was. I mean, in them days, there wasn't such a thing as television, and there wasn't such a thing as very little of radio, you know. I mean, the radio we had was handmade, and the only thing you ever saw was maybe on the newsreel in the pictures, like, you know. And but it was decided that after the Chamberlain do when Chamberlain went to kowtow to Hitler, it started to get through to us that there was something on, and I remember I was in bed this night, and my dad used to sit with his head stuck into the wireless, and I heard him when he came running up the stairs. He says, "You haven't got to go into war, son. You haven't got to go into war, son," because Chamberlain had come back with a little piece of paper. And he was so pleased that the fact that I wasn't going to go to war. And anyway, it dawned on us that there was something going on, and they decided that they would have conscription. Now, prior to this period, when I say we, I mean the lads that I used to knock around with, Bob and Jimmy and the other lad, we wanted to join the army. We wanted to get out of the shops. We were tired of working 12 and 15 hours a day, you know? And it was really, slave labour, and really and truly. Although, after saying that, we were like a family. We were more with each other than what we were with my family, you know, with people in the store, like in the shop. But we were tired of working 12 and 14 hours a day, and we had very little sort of social life or anything like that. And so we decided that we're going to join the Navy. So we trips up the Rye Hill up, and there was three of us. There was Bob, Jimmy and me, and Tommy. No, Tommy didn't want to join. And anyway, there was another lad who was, if you can call a lad beautiful, he was beautiful. And Ken, they called him, can't remember his second name, but he had the most wonderful eyes you've ever seen on a bloke. He had eyelashes that came about a half an inch down onto his cheeks. And we went in and they examined us and tried our eyes. And he came to me and he said to Bob, he says, no, you can't come in. You only got one eye, Bob. You only had one eye. And Jimmy, they didn't wouldn't have Jimmy because he was, he had, I think he had appendix, something to do with his appendix. And they come to me and they said, I'm sorry, we can't have you. He said, I says, what's the matter? He says, well, he says, you had a tooth short. And I says, because at that particular time I had good teeth, but still to my own. And he says, you had a tooth short. He says, but you can join the Marines. Oh, I says, my father wouldn't let us join the Marines. I'm lost.